You're listening to Decoding the Code, the podcast for developers. Together with fantastic guest speakers, we explore coding myths, discover helpful tips for beginners and experts alike, and get a peek behind the digital curtains. Get ready for your host, Mark Backus.
Welcome to this very special throwback episode of Decoding the Code. Back in October, I had the great honor to interview the creator of Vue.js, Avenue for Vue.js Amsterdam. Together with my co-hosts Tim and Israel, we conducted a highly interesting interview which goes way beyond the technical. I really hope you enjoyed this interview because I know I did. Have fun.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official interview with Avenue today. I hope you all enjoy it. And I want to hand over the word to Israel.
Thank you. Yeah, we prepared a very interesting interview today, and I'm going to now hand the word to Mark.
Oh, that was the fastest intro I've ever seen.
Thank you, Israel. In this stage of Vue, so Vue 3, what is your favorite part that you love using?
The interesting part is my favorite part about Vue 3 is actually more from the maintainer standpoint. I just much more happy with the code base itself. I just think it's much better architecture now and much more maintainable, easier for people to understand, for contributors to be able to understand the code and contribute. That's probably my favorite part because I would honestly say like my relationship with Vue now is 90% as the maintainer and 10% as a user myself now.
Okay.
So for me, what makes me the most happy personally is seeing how Vue itself can evolve to make it easy for people to contribute and become part of the, contribute to the code itself. But from a user's perspective, definitely the composition API just unlocks a lot of new possibilities.
What makes you so enthusiastic about Vue?
Sure. So Vue is essentially scratching my own itch because I just feel, our current build systems is just, it just gets slow to a point where it takes some fun out of building web, working on the web. You have to wait a couple seconds every time you save in a big project. And it just breaks that, when we first got into web development, what makes it fun is whenever you save something, you just refresh and everything just instantly reflected. There's no like long wait compared to say people started working on Java or C. Every time you make some changes, you have to wait for it to compile, right? We're getting to that stage in web development now. And I kind of feel like Vue is an attempt to kind of take us back to where everything is near instant. You don't need to, have to wait for a few seconds. And I think that tighter feedback loop is what kind of keeps it fun initially for a lot of people. It makes it more, makes the web development more accessible to beginners in some sense. And obviously as developers, we work on code every day. So anything that can save us time, anything can make the process more enjoyable, I think it's going to help a lot. So that's why I'm excited about it.
More enjoyable aspects of Vue is its community, of course. And one of the reasons why I think the community is so nice is because how healthy the relationship between the core team and the community is. What is it like to maintain a project like Vue as the steward of this community?
I think it's first, what's it like to maintain a project like Vue? It's hard to describe. Sometimes sometimes I just like, I wake up in disbelief, like, oh wow, we have this thing that used by so many people, we have a huge community. And things just work, right? Sometimes it's amazing that the code you write just works for so many people. On the other hand, it can be pretty stressful, especially like, you know, in the few months leading up to the Vue 3 release. It just feels like there's so much work to be done. I mean, we still have a lot of work to be done, but when you realize you have, when you realize the scope of the project has grown so big that in order to say something is ready, you have to get so many different kind of projects to work together as a coherent system. It's a lot of challenge, it's a lot of work. And which brings to the part where it has become impossible to do it without a team, right? And the way the Vue team formed was completely organic, I would say. Honestly, I didn't really plan anything. I just found these people are super enthusiastic about Vue. So why don't we make it a team and work on it together? And I think, to be honest, I can't remember exactly how it like officially started. We officially started calling ourselves as a team, but I think like Pasma, Eduardo, Linus, Chris Fritz were some of the earliest prominent members, and later on we just every time I see someone who's actively contributing, being active on the forums or being active in just like in the community, I would just reach out to them and say, hey, you know, you want to, I don't know how I messaged it, but at some point I started like asking people, hey, do you want to be part of the team? But overall the governance model is still very loose in the sense that we do have a document on GitHub that formally specifies how the project runs. Essentially, we're doing what we call the project lead model, also known as BDFL. So I'm the project lead. So technically I have the final call on all the decisions, but we also have these team members who are respected community members where their input on these issues are what I value a lot. And I will always try to seek consensus or seek, you know, a feedback from these team members before making any major decisions. So typically all the important RFCs that I make, I always have a draft for the team members first and get feedback first. Sometimes I do have a few like proposals that just, I never even publish because, you know, once I shared it with the team, people were like, nah, we're not so sure about this. Right.
Yeah.
So
how often do you like, because of course many of these things happen asynchronously, right? With GitHub issues and like just sharing documents. How often do you meet?
We currently do a bi-weekly meeting schedule. Mm-hmm. So interestingly, I didn't propose this. The team proposed this. And thanks to Sarah and Ben, who's been really and Eduardo, they've been just like keeping things running and on point, which I'm super happy about because I'm not the administrative type. I enjoy more working on the code itself, but it's super helpful to have the team just get together, share what they're working on a regular basis. But one thing I want to mention is like, we have a loose like role or responsibility in terms of these sub projects, like each of the known projects like Router or Vuex or DevTools, like we have this lead person who's sort of working on it the most, but we don't have a hard say deadline, say like we need to, like I don't manage them like a boss because it's an open source project and we kind of do it in a way that I try to give people as much autonomy as possible. So like Eduardo has been working on Vue Router pretty much independently for a long time now. And most of the time he just comes up with ideas and he'll be like, hey, like I'm going to do this in the next release. What do you think? And I most of the time I look at it, I'll basically provide feedback if necessary. But if there are good changes, I'll be just like, yeah, go ahead and do it. That's pretty much how it runs. If there are major technical decisions to be made, mm-hmm. for example, how to make ViewRouter actually work well with Vue Core, that's still kind of important. So I have to definitely make sure that link is correct. But I'm pretty like at the implementation details level, it's all up to Eduardo to handle it. And he's been doing a really great job at it.
Now that you're building stuff that actually starts to have a whole bunch of impact, actually, it reminded me of a story from Douglas Crockford. He's the guy who made JS Lint like way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And actually what he said, he was discussing like his open source work with a friend. And his friend said, yeah, but who uses your stuff? And he's like, everybody. And he's like, oh, so you're monetizing this, right? And he's like, no, there's not really a model for this. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about like how that monetization stuff works?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I tend to look at Vue's model. So first of all, I don't think there is a universal monetization model for all open source software. Because if you think, I kind of think of open source software like startups, right? You have thousands of different types of startups, each with their own unique monetization models. So it's the same for open source projects because the only thing we share is really we are open source, but what kind of market you're fitting in, like what problem you're solving, what's your target audience, what kind of people are actually willing to pay money for it. It varies for every project, right? Like a front end project and back end project can be completely different stories in terms of monetization. And some things are easier for people to be willing to pay money upfront, like, you know, Tailwind components. It's something you see, like you pay money, you get something cool looking instantly, exactly. Right? But for say infrastructure projects like Babel, it's just like people just use it as a no-brainer, but like who would think of paying Babel money, right? It doesn't, like for most people, it just doesn't, it never comes up. It's
it
like-
It exists, yeah.
Yeah, it, yeah it, this it's is like
the,
infrastructure.
The complicated one, exactly, because I spoke about this with Guillaume, and he kind of has this sponsorship thing going, but he builds stuff that people see, right? The Vue UI thing. And I also talked about it with Eduardo, and he's like, yeah, I do similar work, but it's more in the background. So it's pretty challenging to make that thing work, right? Yeah.
And many people think Vue Router is part of Vue, like core, right?
Yeah. So for Vue, it's... like Vue is kind of in between, say, Tailwind and Babel, right? We're more visible. A lot of people actually use Vue directly. And they interact with Vue a lot. They visit our documentation a lot. But at the same time, as a framework, it's not something people are used to, say, pay to use a framework, especially when you have, like in the space, you already have other alternatives, which are also completely free, like React and Angular are available. So it just makes no sense to have a paid product in this space. So for Vue's monetization, it's more like we are free and open source. We're accessible, so we have massive reach. So we kind of have, the only way to sort of monetize is to sort of convert that massive reach into something. So it's all about conversion, right? So Patreon is sort of one way to do it. I mean, in the end, the majority of my Patreon income comes from company sponsors. Individuals make up a very small portion of it. These companies sponsor on Patreon mostly because they get their logos on our website, right? So it's kind of like advertising in some way. It's just more organic and it aligns better with what the project is.
I actually love that model because you can probably just, if you want to pivot to something, they won't have anything to say about that, which is pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, in the end, the reason they're sponsoring is just purely because the massive reach and reputation you have,
exactly.
Right? Yeah. And the good part about this model is that it decouples the income from the more like the deliverables. So it's not like contracting where you have to satisfy your clients in order to get paid. You don't have to chase checks or anything. So I get much more autonomy just working on Vue, just focusing on making Vue better. So it scales with how well Vue itself is doing, right? So And this extends to all other types of incomes that we're making. Say, we have a revenue sharing with these educational content producers like Vue Mastery or Vue School, right? When they get exposure from the Vue website or from our, say, conferences, right? They reach more people, they make more money, and they share a part of their revenue with Vue itself. So again, the interest aligns, right? So I think then we have like theme providers, like people who sell themes or pre-made components. We have a page where we get affiliation links. So all of this is really building on the like people who are creating value on top of the Vue ecosystem, and they are funneling it back to Vue itself. And I think that's a relatively healthy model and more sustainable because all these people who are giving Vue money, they actually made their money because of Vue exists. So I think that's a good thing, right? Yeah. You kind of have an ecosystem that circulates and sustains itself. And at the same time, I still have no strings attached. I'm completely mm-hmm. independent and just work on the things I want to work on. So that's how I look at it. I mean, obviously people have suggested like, hey, you can do this, you can do that. The reality is Vue is not a company, and I don't intend to run it as a for-profit company. So in the end, it's more about, I also have to factor in what kind of lifestyle I want as an open source maintainer, like what kind of work I want to do. I don't want to say become a startup founder where 90% of my time is managing people, talking to investors, trying to figuring out business models, you know, chunking numbers, how we can like convert better and all things like that. These are not the things that I'm particularly interested in. I mean, like if I want to do it, I can probably do it, but like I still enjoy working on Vue directly much more. So
is there still some feature of Vue.js, or is there some influence that caters to enterprise needs?
I would say we definitely see a lot of enterprise users who are more interested in, say, maintainability, solving large scale problems. So that's why TypeScript support is kind of a big theme in Vue 3. Composition API is also a much better mechanism for managing large complex applications, like sharing the logic and maintaining the logic. It just helps a lot. But we still definitely focus on making this thing usable, useful for every Vue user.
But these single developers also have like the interests of their own like big corporates, let's say, in mind. Do you see that reflected in the larger ecosystem, like the kind of projects that are adjacent to Vue that are also like moving now mm-hmm. towards like big corp, for example, data tables, mm-hmm. right? At the beginning mm-hmm. of Vue, probably not a lot of people needed a data table because they were building different mm-hmm. kind of websites. Nowadays, you see many like larger projects that cater mm-hmm. to this. So do you also see that in the larger ecosystem?
It's more like the demand of the market shifts much slower. So we're looking at two different things, right? First is what kind of needs Vue users are covering. So because Vue's user base changed from over time, we started from a relatively small indie developer user base to today where we encompass a much, much more diverse group. We have small developers, small, medium-sized businesses, and large corporations. So, and the reason we are able to grow to get bigger reach is because we are evolving to provide new primitives like Composition API or TypeScript support to allow these different use cases, people to solve these different use cases, right? On the other hand, we're looking at how the whole market itself, like what kind of web apps people are building, that has changed over time too. From where people mostly think of web as just simple pages to now more and more people know that you can actually build pretty complex and large ambitious applications on the web. I mean, people have been doing that since very early, like even before Angular, like Google already built Gmail, right? It's just like now, I guess people, more and more companies and tech executives realize this is something you can actually do. So you get to see that being built more often. But I think these are two kind of separate trends. And I guess it intersects at some point where we're seeing a lot of this kind of applications being built, and we're also seeing a lot of Vue users happen to be building that kind of applications. So yeah, I think the number of that type of applications being built is probably rising, but from Vue's, from the position where Vue is in, data table is somewhat more closer to the end developer.
Yeah.
Vue is still kind of sitting at the semi-infrastructure layer. So we can provide the lower level and primitives for people to be able to build data tables they want. So there will be providers like Vuetify who builds a good data table on top of Vue to support these use cases, right? Or we can make sure Vue integrates well with existing, you know, dedicated solutions like AG Grid or something. I don't think these are mutually exclusive. The thing is like the scope of Vue is there are layers to this, right?
Yeah.
We clearly see that Vue sits at the framework layer where these more dedicated solutions tackling a very, very specific problem tends to, you can actually build a business on itself. But,
on a single project. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
You remember, of course you remember that time when you came up with the new RFC for the composition API and kind of everything exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And generally for most Vue users, it's probably a really good thing, but for some, it was also not so bad, not so good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you decided, because it was like your baby, you put that out, how did you feel and what was your self-talk like when this thing hit and everything exploded? And to me, it looked like people were so happy with this template-driven approach of the options API that it might be a bit scary that it's changing.
Yeah.
Do you think that's it, maybe?
I think there is a mixed part of... there are two types of reactions, right? The type of reaction that we're like, don't take away what we like, don't take away like what's working now. That I think that's validated. That totally makes sense, which is why... we kept everything in V3 pretty much.
Mm.
But on the other hand, there are some people who are, yes, there are a number of people who are simply reluctant to see changes. They're like, this new API is not the Vue that I know of. So to them, this is something different instead of Vue. But from my perspective, the way our core team members, a lot of the advanced users see it, they can see the connection of how Composition API connects to how Vue works fundamentally, how the reactivity system actually is works, right, inside of Vue.
I have another question linking to that a little bit. Like as Tim said, you are like the leader of the community. Like you are the avenue of who made Vue.js, and I want to know a little bit more about how you deal with the popularity, the good parts and the bad parts, because it's like you always have the haters and you have the people that love you. Like how do you deal with both things?
I guess there are some, like when you know a lot of people are always looking at what you say, it kind of puts some pressure every time you try to say something. So, which is why I don't post that often on Twitter anymore. Like, especially like when you try to make articulated points, like when you try to make a point and you have enough followers, there will always be someone who disagrees with you. And there will always be someone who is obsessed about it enough to keep arguing about it with you. So it kind of puts it off, like puts Twitter off of me to some point where I don't want to engage in long conversations because everything I say, someone's going to object to it. So like what's safer is just posting about things that's not tech related.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So it kind of like, it forced me, it's a similar situation on Zhihu, which is a Chinese social network. I think I have similar amount of followers, like 150,000 followers on both platforms, which is just like way too many for you to say anything that's semi-controversial, because like with a following like that, there's always going to be
someone. In the early days, probably finding a website built with Vue was a matter of achievement and like celebration, yeah. Right? I remember we spent some time during Vue.js Amsterdam 2020, and you a couple of times you showed us your phone, like, oh, this brand, they're using Vue. And to me, it was really exciting to see you with this childlike nature, just playing around with the thing that was built with your own creation. So do you have like a favorite website built with Vue that you found?
Every time I use, like I open Essence and like you click on everything, filters, sorting, searching, like going to product details, everything just feels snappy. And it's a complete different experience compared to most of the other e-commerce websites I've used. So it's just like something I really enjoy, like seeing, you know, one of the websites I can relate to, which is something I actually buy stuff on, built with you and have a super nice user experience. That's just like the best.
I have a follow-up question to that. So seeing all these projects that makes you excited about Vue and the project itself, does it make you miss coding yourself? You said you don't code that much anymore.
I mean, I code on Vue itself. Like, I guess, yeah,
but
I don't,
as a user,
I don't build like big real projects that much.
You miss it?
I do. I guess like the chance for us to, for me to actually work on it is sometimes the dev tools, which is still a really interesting thing to work on. It's kind of our dog food like playground, because it's a fixed environment. You know, you're supporting modern browsers. You know, you control the exact version of Vue you're using. So it's like, you get to use anything you want to use in Vue dev tools, which is really cool. But outside of that, I don't actually get to do it very often, and I kind of miss it. But we just have so much other stuff that we have to
imagine.
Fix. Yeah.
Speaking of dev tools, do you have like special EvanU approved dev tools edition that you use to like overcome the production build?
Not really. I mean, it's mostly Guillaume who's working on the dev tools right now, and he's doing a super great job at it. Like every time he works on it, he shares screenshots of the new feature he's working on our Discord first, and everybody's like, "Ooh, when can we have it? Come on, do it now!"
Exclusive preview.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see new features coming in. So it's cool to see like our team members, because they are probably building with Vue more than I do. And it's cool to see them share stuff that they're building with Vue.
So I wanted to ask a question that's slightly more personal. It's like a lot of people I've interviewed, I asked them about this, and they didn't. People that are creative and creators like you are, they tend to also do some other things that nobody really knows about. Like, do you have something that you are like amazing at that nobody knows, or maybe something that inspires you to be what you are?
I mean, I rap, but people already know that now.
Yeah, exactly. You're pretty good at that.
Yeah, I'm pretty big at karaoke. When I was like in China, but like nowadays you don't actually get to do it anymore, yeah, exactly. Which is sad. But I still like, I mean, I enjoy a lot of, like entertainment stuff, like just singing. And then I play a lot of games. I used to be quite competitive in games, but you know, nowadays with kids and work, it's no longer possible.
Life happens, right?
Life happens. But I still play games from time to time.
Yeah, for example, I kind of noticed, like you can see some guitars here, like I don't even play that much now, but it changes your mindset a little bit into this creative form. And do you feel the same when you rap or sing or do anything like that?
Definitely. For me, I know, like, as a singer or rapper, like I'm not in any sense close to professional level, right? I'm like a complete amateur, just like having fun with it. But when I say, but I also kind of get to appreciate more of the craft and the art of people who are really good at it, right? When you listen to a really good rapper rap, like Kendrick Lamar, and you look at his verse, you dissect his flows and everything, you realize, oh, this is actually super, super hard to pull off. To you know, like handle a beat like that or come up with a verse that's so good. And it just shows there are levels to it in everything, right? So when you have a hobby and a hobby, like it's basically a hobby, I know I'll never be as good as Kendrick Lamar, but like it just makes me appreciate like how deep you can go in a certain direction. And it kind of inspires you to be better at what you are good, you think yourself are good at, right?
Yeah, and it makes you happy, I guess. At least that's it in my case.
Cool. And sometimes I think there was a, I kind of saw this, a shared sentiment. Like, say, I know Dan Abramov has looked into like music production. Like he listens to a lot of music, right? He was once asking for like music production courses and that. And I think that's a good outlet because like when you are focused on something as your job or your main focus for so long, it kind of like everything you do in that area becomes, I don't know, people have expectations on you, right? Yeah. Everything I put out, every line of code I write, I have to adhere to the standard that people are already kind of putting me on. But when I'm an amateur in something else, I don't have that pressure. I can do it only for the sake of enjoyment, which is really good, right? Like I can rap, like people will be like, oh, you're good at rapping, but it's only really at like party level. It's not nowhere like I'll ever go on stage to do an actual show or something, right? So for me, it's really just like, you know, having fun.
You one remark there, that's also actually true for many of hobbies, right? Like they started as things that were previously like actually like very hard work and because of the nature of our evolving culture, they are now things we enjoy doing. Do you think coding may become that in some point in the future, especially when you have things like GPT-3 writing code for you now or like AI-based developer experience tools?
Like, I think people still do that from time to time. I mean, people already do that. It's just like coding is something that, if you think about all these people making these like CSS experiments or just like,
artistic,
right? I mean, developers already do this, right? Every time someone on Twitter say, hey, I just built this cool thing, right? Yeah. They probably did it on the weekend. It's for fun and people like it. That's a way for developers to sort of, you know, it's just still within the programming realm, but it's kind of like, it's not
artistic
something
expression
do for production or anything, right? It's not for like for making money or building a business. It's just for like a creative outlet, right?
Talking about creative outlet or being creative, I have also a little bit of personal question. Like, what's your favorite place to work, for example? Not now in the COVID times where you can't really go anywhere, but do you have like a specific place that you love to work at home or maybe at a coffee shop or something?
I mean, I don't have much choice. I mean, I like the home office. It's close to family, so you know, I don't have to commute, which is really great. But I used to, so I spent close to half a year. So before COVID, I kind of spent like a few months in China every other year. And when I was back in China, I went to work in coffee shops, and it's really cool. Like I pretty much was doing coffee shop crawling, like in the streets where I was living nearby. I basically visited every coffee shop on that whole street. Just like try a different one every day. The downside of that is you don't always get good Wi-Fi connections.
So, oh yes.
It can be annoying.
Or secure.
Yeah, I'm thinking security right off the bat.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
Do people recognize you in coffee shops sometimes?
Not really. I mean, only if I go to a place where there are a lot of programmers.
Okay.
I've got recognized like once on that street, because there are actually a few tech companies on that street. Mm-hmm. I think I was like going out for lunch, and later on I went back, and on the Chinese Weibo, someone like commented, "Hey, I saw you on blah, blah, blah street today." I was like, dude, are you stalking me?
No, man, it's because you're famous now. Hey, talking about streets. So what if you had like a big billboard and you can put that on a street with like a lot of people, like maybe on a highway? Is there something you would write on that billboard for people to read?
I mean,
it can also be like use Vue.js, but maybe
that's more direct. I would say just like trust your guts.
Very good.
Because that's what I did with Vue most of the time. Like a lot of times, I guess you are always faced with decisions, right? Especially since I started working full time on open source, it's like completely Wild West. Like I have no idea what I was getting into. I have no idea where I should like how I should like handle all this stuff. So I'm like just facing decisions after decisions after decisions, and over time I just kind of like, you know, like it could be a good decision or a, you know, sometimes it's not about good versus bad decisions. It's like a good decision versus a better decision, right? So just take one. Like it could be, but because once you take one, you don't have the chance to take the other one again, right? So in the end, like you don't really, it's like you could be slightly worse off if you take this one, but it's not like, if you don't take the decision, you're probably even worse off, right? Yeah. So just like trust your guts and take the decision, like, and most of the time I didn't regret it, right? So
great answer.
Yeah,
words to live by for sure. And with that nugget of knowledge, Evan, we would really like to thank you for your time being here. I know that our listeners and viewers are going to trust really their gut when they start using Vue.3, and well, they made the right choice by looking at this interview. So
what a fancy bridge, Israel. Wow.
Segway master. I have all of them here.
You did it, man.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Decoding the Code. A new episode will be available every week. So don't forget to tune in next Monday. For past episodes, check out the website decoding.show.